but that the gates of magic open when the student is ready, not before. If you do not learn the Bronze Year lessons, you will remain in Bronze Year until you do."
Kaul looked over at Aaron and Tamara. They appeared as floored as he felt. He wasn't sure how any of what Master Rufus was talking about could be learned in school. It was remotely possible, however, that his brain was being slowed by heatstroke.
"One more thing," Master Rufus said, "about the spy in the Magisterium. Tamara, I don't know if I've spoken to you directly about this, but I am sure that Kaul or Aaron already told you, so I won't embarrass us both by pretending otherwise. You have every right to know. However, I insist, that you do not attempt to catch the spy yourselves. Leave this to us."
None of them said anything. Master Rufus's eyebrows drew together more sharply.
"Do you understand?"
Kaul nodded. "Sure," Aaron said. "Okay," said Tamara. It was the most unconvincing display Kaul had ever seen. He wasn't sure if Master Rufus had been taken in, or had just given up when the mage nodded and said,
"Good. Now, I believe our first lesson should be about the element of water and how to balance it with air so that we can breathe underwater when we're swimming. I know just the lake we can practice in."
Kaul jumped up, pleased by the idea of cooling off. It was only as they started moving that he remembered Jen's body floating in the ocean, and wondered if there was a reason that Master Rufus had put this particular lesson at the very top of his list. Despite Kaul's dark thoughts, they spent a pleasant day bobbing around in the shallows of a small lake near the school. Master Rufus gave them amulets filled with air for them to hold and draw from while they were underwater. On the first few tries, Kaul couldn't focus and came up sputtering and choking. Aaron didn't fare better, though Tamara seemed serenely untroubled. Finally, in frustration, Kaul grabbed the amulet and dived down toward the bottom of the pond. He'd always liked swimming. In the water, his leg didn't ache. He kept his eyes open. The lake was silty, but fresh. He could see small fish darting around the plants that waved in the faint current. He could see Tamara and Aaron, blurred shapes in the water. He thought, for some reason, of his father. He had seen in Master Joseph's memories how Alistair had climbed the side of a massive glacier to reach the scene of the cold massacre where the enemy of death had killed dozens of helpless mages. Alistair had been climbing toward his wife and baby son, using water magic to form handholds and footholds in the glacier wall. It must have been exhausting. It must have seemed impossible. Compared to that, this was nothing. Kaul tightened his grasp on the amulet, squeezing it so hard he thought he felt it crack. Air, he thought. Air all around him. There was air in the water. All elements were one. Fire and earth, air and water. All are but one thing, not four, not two, and not three, but one. He opened his mouth and breathed. It was like breathing damp, swampy air. He choked a little, letting his body drift upward as air filled his lungs. The second breath was easier, and by the third and fourth he was breathing normally. Standing on the bottom of the lake, breathing normally. Jubilantly, he tossed the amulet aside and swam upward, breaking the surface with a yell. "I did it!" he shouted. "I breathed underwater!" "I know," said Tamara, treading water. I saw you! Woo! Said Aaron. He punched the surface of the lake, making it spray up. You rule! Hello, we all rule, Tamara objected, as Call started swimming in circles, diving down to breathe and coming up again. He splashed water and grinned. Sometimes, magic really was just as awesome as he'd secretly hoped it would be. That night, they were the only people in the library. Tamara, Call, Aaron, and Jasper, huddled around a table where a light glowed inside a lamp made from the shell of a huge underwater snail. They kept their voices down. Sound tended to echo in the big, spiral stone room.
So the question is whether whoever tried to kill Call at the awards ceremony is someone who'd be at the Magisterium, said Tamara, shuffling some papers. I made a list of all the people who attend school here or teach here, as well as assembly members who can come in and out.
Jasper leaned forward to look at the list. You're not on it, he said.
Of course I'm not.
Tamara flushed.
I didn't try to kill Call.
Kimaya's not on it either, said Jasper. Or Aaron.
Because they're not trying to kill me, said Call.
You don't know that, said Jasper. The list should be objective. I should be on it, too.
Believe me, said Tamara. You are.
Jasper made a face.
Good.
Look, I know poking around when we're not supposed to be is kind of our thing, Call said, interrupting them.
But maybe this time we don't try to catch the spy ourselves. Master Rufus says there's some kind of plan in place, and Alex's stepmom is here and is supposed to be setting a trap. Maybe we could leave it to them.
They all stared at Call, as though he'd grown a second head. Finally, Aaron spoke.
Did you drink too much pond water today or something? There's no way you'd be saying that if it was one of us who was in danger.
Think about it this way, Jasper said. If the same person who released automatones tried to drop the chandelier on you, then anyone standing next to you is just as likely to get killed as you are. So for my own sake, I want to look into this.
Call couldn't argue with logic like that.
I've been thinking, Tamara said. We need to get down in the tunnels where the huge elementals are kept. Then maybe we could figure out who had access to automatones and how they got it. We can use this list to see if any of these people were down there. There's got to be some record of visitors or of who has clearance.
Won't the mages have already looked into that?
Aaron asked. Tamara shrugged.
Even if they have, they won't give us those names. So it's a place for us to start narrowing our suspect pool.
Someone spent their summer rereading all their Nancy Drew mysteries,
Jasper said. Tamara gave him a toothy grin.
Someone is going to get a punch in their face.
Do you have a better idea? Aaron asked. Because if not, don't criticize.
How about Call makes himself into bait?
Jasper offered. I mean, why wait around and do all this legwork when we can make the killer come to us? We just let everyone know Call is going to be somewhere remote and alone, and then when the killer shows up to finish him off, we can jump.
Hey, wait a minute, Call said. That idea is stupid.
I thought we weren't supposed to criticize, Jasper said, grinning with self-satisfaction.
I think there's no way it could go wrong.
Tamara shook her head. Call could get killed.
We'd still catch the spy, Jasper said, then winced after being kicked savagely under the table. What? Not a lot of plans have that kind of built-in guarantee.
Let's try it Tamara's way first, Aaron said.
Then, yawning, he stood.
After class is tomorrow. Let's meet here again.
We can look through the Magisterium maps and see if we can figure out where the elementals are kept. I'll take first shift tonight. Tamara, Cole, you both get some sleep.
See you then, suckers, Jasper said.
He departed the library by taking the steps on the spiral staircase, two at a time. Cole wanted to protest that one of them being awake, taking watch, was unnecessary. But no one was going to listen to him anyway. He got up with a sigh and followed Tamara and Aaron back to their rooms. Halfway there, though, he straightened up with a jolt.
I know who'd be able to get to those elementals, Cole said. Warren!
The little lizard was a fire elemental after all, and while he couldn't entirely be trusted, he knew the layout of the Magisterium better than probably anyone or anything else. He'd led them through its labyrinthine corridors before, admittedly bringing them to the attention of a more powerful and sinister elemental, but still, nothing that bad had happened. And besides, last year they'd saved Warren's life. Master Rufus had set up a test of Aaron's chaos magic in which Aaron had been supposed to send the lizard into the void. Cole wasn't sure what happened to things that got sucked into the void, but he was pretty sure they wouldn't survive. He'd helped Aaron to do some tricky magic so the lizard could escape. As far as Cole was concerned, Warren owed them.
Come on, he said.
Then, about-faced in the middle of the hall, this way. The longer the spy was around, the longer his friends were going to hover over him like there was something wrong. He hated it. He didn't want them to be awake when he was asleep. He didn't want them in danger. If there was something to be done, he wanted to do it now.
Where are we going?
Tamara protested, as they headed back the way they'd come,
back to the library.
The corridor split in half. Cole veered to the left. He remembered when he'd first come to the Magisterium, how he'd thought he'd never learn the tunnels, the maze-like corridors that ran under and through the mountain. But he had. And now the paths through the upper levels of the Magisterium were as familiar to him as the streets of his hometown.
Are we going to the river?
Aaron asked in a half-whisper. The air of the tunnels was getting damper. They'd passed several of the rooms of other apprentice groups, only darkness showing under their doors.
The Magisterium was asleep.
The rivers that ran through the school were its transportation artery. They carried students from classrooms to gates that led outside, to the refectory and back to their rooms. Small boats moved on the rivers, powered by magic and assisted by water elementals. As Cole, Aaron, and Tamara approached the water, the cave air grew colder and Cole could hear the rushing sound of the river. Aaron and Tamara were muttering about whether Cole was dragging them off to take a boat. The corridor opened out onto a pebbled underground beach. Phosphorescent moss clung to the walls and roof, lighting the space. Eyeless fish swam around under the water's surface.
Warren! Cole called. Warren!
Aaron and Tamara exchanged a look. It was clear they thought Cole had lost his mind.
Maybe he needs sleep, said Tamara. Maybe he needs food, said Aaron.
Warren!
Cole shouted again.
The end is closer than you think.
Lizards don't come when you call them, Tamara said. Let's get out of here, Cole.
Something scrambled down from the rocky overhang above them. There was a flash of fire, light on scales. Red eyes gleamed in the dimness. What looked like a tiny Komodo dragon with a beard and back ridge made out of fire crawled toward them across the rocks.
"Warren?" said Call. "He really did come."
Aaron sounded impressed.
"Awesome, Call!" "Sneaking?"
Warren looked annoyed.
"Sneaking and bothering, Warren! What do you want, mage students?"
"We want you to take us to the sleeping elementals. The ones bound by the Magisterium," Call said.
"Right now?"
Tamara demanded, whirling on Call. "I thought we were going to sleep."
"Yes, sleep. Sneaking too dangerous," Warren said. "Tunnels too deep."
"You owe us, Warren," Call said. "We saved your life. Don't you remember?"
"I pay you back already,"
Warren muttered.
"I warn you. Ultima forsan."
"That's not help," Call said. He knew what ultima forsan was, a Latin phrase that had been carved over the enemy of death's resting place.
It meant, "The end is closer than you think." He just didn't see how it was a warning in any useful way.
"Taking us to the elementals, that would be helpful."
"Maybe you don't know how to get there,"
Aaron taunted the little lizard. Although he was the one who'd yawned back at the library, now his eyes glittered, and he didn't look tired in the least. Aaron was someone who didn't like talking about doing things half as much as he liked actually doing them.
"Is that the problem? Maybe you don't know that much about the Magisterium, after all."
Warren's red eyes whirled.
"I know," he said. "I know everything. But this is dangerous, little mage students. Dangerous business. I could take you, but you will have to trick the Guardian."
"The Guardian?"
Tamara asked, in tones of dread. Call also would have liked some more clarification, but Warren, apparently deciding that his half of their conversation was over, sprang toward a shining mica wall and ran halfway up before dashing toward the entrance to the other cavern.
"Follow that lizard,"
Call announced, going after him. Tamara groaned, but she followed. He forgot that letting Warren lead you through the caves of the Magisterium, including some passageways that might never have been used by a single mage before them, was a frustrating and sometimes terrifying endeavor. The lizard led them along naturally forming cliffs and past lakes of what appeared to be boiling mud. He guided them into and out of rooms where they nearly choked on the sulfur smell, and where they had to duck to avoid being scraped by the pointed ends of stalactites. Call wasn't sure how far they'd walked when his legs started really hurting, the kind of burning muscle pain that was only going to get worse. He felt stupid for suggesting they do this, stupid for thinking he could walk this far. But he couldn't ask Warren to stop. The lizard was too far ahead of them, leaping from rock formation to rock formation, the crystals on his back ablaze. And if Tamara and Aaron paused to wait for him, Warren might sprint ahead, leaving them lost in the caves. It had happened before. Experimentally, Call drew on air magic, pushing slightly. He remembered the way Alistair had sent Call up the long, winding steps of the Collegium. He remembered how he'd made his own way down them. All he had to do was concentrate and push. Call went up into the air, fast enough that he had to bite the side of his cheek to keep from crying out, but after a moment he was able to steady himself. He was floating just a little bit above the ground, and none of the weight was on his leg. He felt amazing. He pushed himself along with his mind, no longer stumbling like Aaron or Tamara did. He glided over the earth as though this was the way he was meant to walk. As they went along, the passages curling deeper into the mountain, the walls became smoother, the ground under their feet polished. It was as if they were making their way down the hallway of a museum. The doors, set into the stone on either side, were elegant, decorated with alchemical symbols and alphabets that Call didn't know. At last, Warren stopped in front of a massive door made from the five metals of the Magisterium: iron, copper, bronze, silver, and gold.
"Here, mage students. Here is the locked door in the way of the way. The guardian is here. You must face her to go farther."
"What do we do?"
"Answer her riddles," Warren said, and, flicking out his tongue to nab a cave bug that Call hadn't seen until the lizard scooped it up and raced off along the ceiling. "Riddle her answers," he called back, before he disappeared.
"Crap," Aaron said. "This always happens. I hate riddles."
Tamara looked as though she was forcibly swallowing the words "I knew it," and not much liking their taste.
"Do we just knock?"
Call lifted his fist, and then hesitated.
"I'll do it." Tamara pounded on the door. "Hello? We're students and we've come to do a project."
The door opened. Standing inside, in a white suit, entirely untouched by her surroundings, was Anastasia Tarquin. Her cloud of silver hair had been pulled back tightly, and silver earrings sparkled in her ears as though they'd been enchanted to do so. Her manicured eyebrows shot up at the sight of them, and her mouth compressed into a thin line.
"You're the guardian?"
Aaron asked incredulously. "I don't know what you mean," she said, opening the door more widely. Behind it, they could see a long corridor that sloped downward. Two collegium-aged boys in uniforms stood against the walls.
"Guards," Call thought.
"What I do know is that you're not supposed to be down here." "Master Rufus wanted us to start a project," Call began. "Like Tamara said, it's our bronze year, and we're supposed to be figuring out our futures and our personal responsibilities, so we wanted to specialize in elementals, and, we wanted to meet some."
"All three of you?"
Tarquin asked. "Including two chaos magicians?"
"You all want to specialize in elementals?"
"We're thinking about it," Aaron said quickly. "We don't want to rush into anything, but it's interesting. And we figure if we got to see some of the most amazing elementals around, we'll be sure one way or another."
Anastasia Tarquin didn't look like she believed them for a minute.
"I'm afraid that while students might have, infrequently, been given access to the elementals bound here before, that privilege has been suspended for the moment for reasons that I believe you already know."
Automatones. Call remembered the massive metal monster rearing above them, tearing at the air with fire and claws.
"Now," said Anastasia, "unless you want me to discuss this with Master Rufus, I suggest you go back the way you came, and we will both pretend we didn't see one another."
Call looked from Tamara to Aaron.
"So much for riddles," Aaron said under his breath.
Then, unfailingly polite, he turned to Anastasia Tarquin.
"We're sorry to have disturbed you."
She, however, didn't seem particularly charmed by him. Her eyes didn't lose their flinty look.
"Just one moment," she said.
but she wasn't looking at Aaron.
Colum Hunt, come inside. I would like to speak with you, alone.
Me?
Call asked, his voice going a little squeaky. He hadn't expected that, and with all the spy business he wasn't sure he wanted to be alone with any member of the Assembly. But she was Alex's stepmother, and the Assembly had sent her to protect him.
Okay.
Tamara and Aaron looked at him mutely. Cole was pretty sure they didn't want to change places right then. He walked through the door and she closed it behind him with a heavy clang. Anastasia put one hand on his shoulder.
You must be very worried.
To come down here, looking for answers, she said, her voice softening in a way that made him nervous. He thought of the way snakes he'd seen on television did a little dance before they struck. And I know how close you are to Aaron. You two look out for each other, don't you?
Yeah,
Cole said. I mean, yes. Aaron and Tamara and I, we all do.
It's so good to have close friends, she agreed, nodding. Especially when you have a parent who doesn't approve of magic.
Alistair's coming around, Cole said, trying to guess what this was about.
When I married Alex's father, I swore I would never try to replace his mother. I had my own children from my first marriage, and I knew how important it was not to try and impose myself where I wasn't wanted. I tried to be a friend, a guide, and a mentor. Someone who could answer his questions straightforwardly, as so many adults don't. I would be happy to do that for you as well, if you ever need someone to talk to.
Okay,
said Cole, puzzled by the whole conversation. He tried to glance past Anastasia a little, see what was hidden behind her. The two Collegium guards were completely silent, ranged along the wall of the room like suits of armor. There was a sofa with a newspaper on it, probably where she'd been sitting, and a corridor that stretched away behind. A deep, red glow illuminated its walls.
So you're definitely not going to let us in?
Anastasia looked amused rather than angry.
You want me to say I would if I could, I imagine. But you have no idea how dangerous the great elementals are. It would be like tossing you into the mouth of a volcano. A friend would never put you in danger, Colum. Do you understand?
Because I'm a Makar, Cole said.
I get it, but
no buts.
Anastasia shook her head.
You and Aaron should go back to sleep. You are far too important to risk yourselves. Try to remember that.
With that, she opened the door. When Cole stepped out to where Aaron and Tamara were waiting, he heard the door slam behind him. Chapter 7.
You went without me?
Jasper demanded, fork stabbing into the gray pudding on his plate. It was afternoon. Cole, Tamara, and Aaron had all slept through breakfast after their adventure in the tunnels the night before. Cole had felt achy and fuzzy-headed through their lesson, nearly dropping a ball of fire on Tamara's head and singeing his own fingers. He'd forgotten to walk Havoc until halfway through class and had to clean up the resultant mess. Being back at school wasn't as easy as he'd hoped it would be.
It was a spur-of-the-moment thing, Cole said in a conciliatory manner, then remembered to whom he was talking
I mean, not that I would ever choose to bring you anywhere, but in this case, leaving you out of it was just a side benefit.
Hey, Jasper said, I am trying to save your life.
Don't mind him, Aaron interrupted. He gets snappish when he's tired.
So what did Anastasia do to you?
Jasper said. My father always told me that she was some kind of stone-cold ice queen.
She was really nice to call, Tamara said. It was weird. She had no time for me and barely looked at Aaron. It was all call, call, call.
I guess I'm the new news, Makar. You're the old news, Makar. Call said to Aaron. I make this blue uniform look good.
Tamara laughed. Aaron sighed with deep resignation.
Wow,
Jasper said, looking at Call with wide eyes. You didn't tell me he got delusional when he was tired.
Call took a deep drink of the brown tea-like substance in his wooden cup. He hoped desperately that it had caffeine in it. All summer he'd been able to indulge in as many espressos as he wanted. Alistair had repaired an old deco-style gaja machine that chugged like a train, but now that he really needed it, there was no coffee in sight. He was tired. Tired of being watched by his friends, even if it was because they were trying to keep him safe. Tired of having a horrible thing about himself, a thing he had no control over, hanging over his head. He wanted to go to school like a normal person, and right then, he was willing to do anything to make that happen.
Okay, he said. I will do your stupid plan.
What? Asked Jasper, frowning at him.
Which stupid plan?
With a slight wince, Call climbed up onto his chair, then from his chair onto the top of their table. He stood with his foot narrowly avoiding landing in Jasper's gray pudding and surveyed the room.
Oh, no, Aaron said. I think you were right about him getting delusional with tiredness.
Students were laughing and chattering with one another. Mages were munching on lichen. Then Rafe caught sight of Call standing on the table. He yelped and poked Gwenda, who was next to him.
A murmur ran around the room, and soon everyone was staring at Call, pointing and whispering.
Call?
Tamara hissed in a stage whisper.
Get down!
Call was having none of it.
Guess what?
He yelled, making his voice loud enough to carry over the whole refectory.
I am going to be at the library tonight at midnight. Alone!
He sat down again. His friends stared at him. Across the whole room, he could see other apprentices looking over at his table. Gwenda whispered something in Celia's ear, and they both started giggling. Alex Strike wore an odd, concerned expression on his face. Master Milagros was staring at Call as if he'd been dropped on his head as a child.
That... What was that?
Tamara sputtered.
Are you out of your mind?
He was making himself bait, Aaron said.
He looked at Call with a serious expression.
I hope that was a good idea, he said. The downside of letting everyone know you're going to be all alone so they can attack you is that everyone knows you'll be all alone so they can attack you.
Pfft, said Tamara.
Nobody's going to be dumb enough to come after him because of that public announcement. They'd get caught right away.
Call shrugged and took a big bite of lichen. He felt oddly better. Things were back in their proper place. His friends all thought he was nuts, and he was about to do something foolish. A grin started at the corner of his mouth.
Someone sedate him quickly, Jasper said. Who knows what he might do next?
But either the brown liquid Call had been drinking had caffeine in it after all, or having something to do helped.
because energy was zipping through his veins. He didn't feel tired anymore. He felt ready. Cole half expected there to be a group of avid onlookers when he arrived at the library that night. But it was empty. Tamara, Aaron, and Jasper did a sweep, looking behind bookcases, while Havoc nosed around under tables. The room was definitely deserted. Cole sat down at one of the tables, lit by a huge stalactite that had been driven through the center of the wood, pinning the table to the floor. Light swirled and glowed inside the stalactite.
"Okay," said Tamara, returning from the top floor of the spiral library. "You're on your own."
Aaron put his hand on Call's shoulder.
"Remember," he said, "if you need to do any chaos magic, don't try to do it all on your own. I'm your counterweight. I'll be just outside with the others. Draw on me, on my chaos energy, like you'd draw on air if you were underwater."
Cole nodded as Aaron let go of him and grabbed Havoc's ruff. His dark green eyes were worried.
"Try not to do anything stupid," Jasper said.
As parting supportive remarks went, it wasn't one of Jasper's worst.
"Here, try to pretend like you're reading something instead of sitting here by yourself like a creeper."
He dumped a bunch of books on the table in front of Cole and turned to go. Cole watched as his friends trailed out of the room. A moment later, he was alone in the library.
"Draw on me,"
Aaron had said. But the truth was, Cole was still afraid of using Aaron as a counterweight. It was what had turned Constantine Madden into the enemy of death. All chaos mages had to have a counterweight who was a human being, a living soul that would anchor them to the real world and keep them from sliding into chaos. Constantine's had been his twin brother, Jericho. Then, one day his magic had gotten out of control. It had overwhelmed him, and he'd reached for his brother's magic to anchor himself, but he'd succeeded only in destroying his brother. Cole couldn't imagine what that would be like, to kill someone you loved by accident.
"I should know what it feels like," he thought.
After all, it was something that had happened to his soul, and surely that sort of thing ought to leave a mark. But Cole didn't feel anything when he thought about it, except worry that he might make the same mistake. Maybe that was proof of what was wrong with him. He ought to be feeling pity for Jericho, who had died, but all his pity was for Constantine.
"Cole?"
He nearly jumped out of his skin. Whirling around, he saw that someone had come into the library. A blonde someone, in jeans and a t-shirt. Her hair in two ponytails. She had her hands awkwardly in the back pockets of her jeans.
"Call?"
said Celia again. She stepped forward, closer to him. She was blushing, which immediately made Call also blush, as if blushing were something that was catching, like chicken pox.
"You said you were going to be all alone in here, so I thought..."
He said. What had Celia thought? Maybe that he'd lost his mind and needed to be taken to the infirmary?
"I thought maybe you wanted to talk to me,"
she said, perching on a table across from his.
"It's hard to talk alone anywhere. The refectory's always so crowded, and so is the gallery. And I haven't seen you walking Havoc lately."
It was true. For a while the previous year, Cole and Celia had walked havoc every night together. But now, he wasn't allowed out alone with havoc. Tamara and Jasper were taking turns walking him.
Yeah, I've been...
Cole's voice trailed off. He wondered if it was possible to have a conversation entirely in sentences that trailed off. If so, he and Celia were definitely on their way to an epic example.
Where did you get those?
Celia asked, suddenly laughing. Cole glanced down and realized that she was pointing at the books on his table.
Fire Elements and Love Spells, a Primer. The Alchemy of Love.
Water Magic and Commitment Spells, How to Get Her to Say Yes.
He was going to murder Jasper.
I was just...
It's for an assignment, Cole said. Celia put her elbows on her knees and looked at him meditatively.
If you want to ask me out, Cole, just ask me out, she said. We're third years now, and I've liked you since Iron Year.
Really?
Cole was amazed. She gave him a tentative smile.
You couldn't tell? All those times walking havoc together, and the kiss. I figured you knew, but then Gwenda said I should just tell you, so here I am.
She said you should tell me?
Cole felt very stupid, echoing her, but his mind had gone almost completely blank. Was he supposed to thank her as though liking him was a compliment? That didn't seem right. Probably he should tell her he liked her too, and he did like her, but what would telling her that mean? Would they be going out? Would they have to kiss? Would it mean they couldn't walk havoc together and joke around anymore? As Cole opened his mouth to say something, although he still wasn't sure what, Tamara and Jasper raced up the stairs to the landing. Aaron and Havoc dropped from above. The chaos-ridden wolf began to bark. Aaron looked ready for a fight.
Stop right there!
Jasper shouted. Fire ignited in Tamara's palm. Celia spun around, eyes wide. The flame guttered out abruptly. Tamara clasped both her hands behind her back.
Oh, hi!
She said with an awkward and slightly hysterical laugh.
We were just...
What are you doing here?
Aaron demanded. Some of the light of battle was still in his eyes, and he didn't sound as kind as he usually did. They must have been really surprised when they saw that Cole wasn't alone, surprised and scared.
Cole was about to ask me out, Celia said, confused and clearly upset. Or at least I think he was. What are you all doing here? Why was everyone yelling?
For a long moment, they were all quiet. Cole had no idea how to explain any of this to her.
Maybe I should just be honest, he thought.
Sort of honest, anyway. He didn't have to tell her about the whole Captain Fishface angle, but then he realized none of it made any sense without mentioning Captain Fishface. Still, he had to say something. She was his friend.
The thing is that someone is trying...
Cole started, his whole body flushing hot with embarrassment. He was sure that he was going to say something stupid and that Tamara was going to see him do it and make fun of him. He was sure Celia wasn't going to understand.
I came to ask you out,
Jasper said suddenly, loudly, breaking in on Cole's explanation.
That's why I said stop right there, because, I wanted him to stop asking you out before I got a chance. Don't go out with him, go out with me.
Aaron's eyebrows shot up. Tamara made a choking sound. Cole couldn't believe his ears. Celia looked at Jasper in surprise.
You like me?
Yes, he said, a little wild-eyed. I definitely do like you.
Cole remembered that when Jasper had asked Cole if he liked Celia, he'd also said that maybe he wanted to ask her out. Did he? Or was he just trying to throw her off figuring out what was going on? Or was he trying to annoy Cole? The last one seemed the most likely. Celia cut her gaze to Cole expectantly, as though he was supposed to say something or do something. He gazed back at her in total bafflement. Finally, she sighed and turned to Jasper.
I'd love to go out with you, she said.
Well, I think we can all agree that that was a total bust, Aaron said as they trudged back toward their rooms.
Not for Jasper, said Tamara, who, to Cole's annoyance, seemed to think the whole thing was a little funny. Actually, a lot funny. She'd nearly exploded trying to keep herself from laughing after Celia had agreed to go out with Jasper. Cole wasn't sure who'd looked more nonplussed, him or Jasper, but Jasper recovered quickly and began telling Celia what a great time they were going to have at the gallery. At that point, Cole had given up. He'd left the library. Aaron, Tamara, and Havoc scrambled after him. Tamara was dancing along beside Havoc now, making him jump up to put his paws on her shoulders.
This is going to be the best date ever, she said. Jasper doesn't know anything about girls. He'll probably bring her a bouquet of eyeless fish.
It's not going to be the best date ever, Cole snapped. Jasper's doing this to annoy me. He'll probably be really mean to Celia. He'll hurt her feelings, and it'll be my fault.
Oh, for goodness sake, Cole, Tamara huffed. He's not going to be mean to Celia. Not everything is about you.
This is about me, said Cole.
Maybe not.
There was an edge to Tamara's voice.
Maybe he just likes Celia.
I think both of you are losing sight of the big picture here, said Aaron, as they rounded a corner where the corridor narrowed.
What if Celia's the murderer?
What? Said Cole.
Well, she came when she knew you'd be alone in the library,
Aaron pointed out.
To see if I was going to ask her out, Cole said.
That's her cover story. I bet she showed up and sensed something wasn't right, so she bluffed.
Why would Celia want to kill Cole? Tamara demanded.
They had reached their rooms, and she used her wristband to pop the door open. They went inside the dim living area. Havoc quickly leaped up on the sofa and stretched out luxuriantly, ready to sleep.
Yeah, Cole said. Why would she want to kill me?
She could be working for an organization,
Aaron replied stubbornly.
Look, Drew had a totally fictitious background. He wasn't who he said he was. Master Rufus said there was a spy. She could be the spy.
Cole shook his head, unbuckling Miri from his belt and laying the knife down on the kitchen table.
Celia comes from an old magic family. She is who she says she is.
How do you know?
Aaron continued. Just because she told you about some aunt doesn't make it true. Or maybe the whole family supports the enemy. Remember how you thought the note came from her? What if it did come from her? That's a simpler explanation than anything else. Besides, if you could tell she was a spy, she wouldn't be a very good spy, would she?
You might as well accuse Havoc of being a spy, said Cole.
They all looked at Havoc. He was asleep, his tongue hanging down to the floor. As he slept, his feet paddled, as if he were going after an imaginary duck.
I'm not saying we should drag her in front of the assembly right now, Aaron said. Just that we should keep an eye on her. In fact, we should keep an eye on anyone behaving weirdly.
Wanting Cole to ask her out
isn't weird, said Tamara, rubbing Havoc's stomach. Well, maybe a little weird, but not illegal.
Thanks, said Cole. Thanks for the support.
He picked up Miri and headed toward his bedroom, then turned around in the doorway to look back at Aaron.
I'm going to sleep.
So am I.
Aaron crossed his arms over his chest. I'm sleeping on the floor in front of your room, in case anything tries to attack in the night.
Cole slumped. Do you have to?
In answer, Aaron lay down on the floor in front of Cole's bedroom door, recrossed his arms over his chest, and shut his eyes. Havoc flopped down beside him.
Traitor, Cole thought.
With a sigh, he retreated into his bedroom, shutting his door firmly. The room was lit with dim phosphorescent light. Cole kicked his boots off and went to sit down on the bed. His leg was aching. He felt tired and dispirited, and more annoyed about Celia and Jasper than he would have anticipated. He could see his own reflection in the wardrobe mirror. He looked tired. The room was full of shadows behind him.
Cole froze.
One of the shadows was moving.
Chapter 8. Cole wanted to scream. He knew he should scream, but surprise and terror robbed him of breath. The shadow moved again, uncoiling against the uneven rock of the ceiling. As it slithered closer to the phosphorescent moss, Cole's panicked hope that it was just a trick of the light was dashed. It was a huge air elemental, whip-fast and insubstantial in places. It looked like an enormous eel from the deepest part of the ocean, if eels had huge, tooth-filled mouths on either side of their long bodies. It moved sluggishly, like dank, humid air at the edge of a storm.
Aaron?
He tried to yell, but his voice came out as a whisper, too soft to be heard by anyone but the elemental. One of its heads pulled away from the ceiling with a wet, sucking sound and dangled down toward him. Its mouth opened, and Cole could see that despite being formed of ephemeral air, the thing had teeth that seemed very real and very sharp. The skin around its mouth was pulled back so that its maw was in a perpetual rictus grin. It looked like it was going to bite him in half and then laugh about it. It had no eyes, just indentations in its head.
Miri, he thought.
The knife Alistair had given him, the one made by his mother, it was on the nightstand, several feet behind him. Could the elemental see him? Cole wasn't sure.
Slowly, slowly, he edged back on the bed. He stretched his body flat, lying down in a way that exposed his most vulnerable parts, his neck and stomach. The elemental moved toward him, as if sniffing the air.
Cole swallowed, reaching up over his head, reaching, until his fingers brushed the edge of Miri's hilt. In the other room, Havoc began to bark. The elemental sprang. A scream tore from Cole's lungs as he seized the blade and sat up, slashing blindly forward. The heavy weight of the creature knocked him back on his bed. Its open maw snapped at his face while the dagger embedded itself just under the creature's jaw. He tried to push it back with the knife, but although the blade cut deeper into the elemental's airy flesh, it squirmed closer. He felt those horrible teeth against his skin, and the sharp talons razoring at his clothes and slicing skin. He rolled off his bed,
feeling the warmth of blood. It didn't hurt yet. But he had a feeling it was going to. If he survived. The elemental whipped around, fast as a tornado, and dived for Call just as he leaped for the door. He could hear Havoc frantically barking on the other side, could hear Aaron's sleepy, confused voice.
"What's going on? What's wrong, boy?"
Call yanked at the door. It didn't open. "Aaron!" Call shouted, finding his voice. "Aaron, there's an elemental in here. Get the door open!" "Call?" Aaron sounded frantic. The doorknob jiggled and the door shook in its frame, but it didn't budge.
"It's covered in locking spells!"
Aaron shouted.
"Call, get out of the way! Back up!"
Call didn't need to be told twice. He flung himself away from the door and rolled against his wardrobe, yanking the front of it open as the elemental dived. It hit the wardrobe door, sending splinters of wood in all directions. Call just had time to leap away and scramble under the bed as it lunged for him again. He kept moving, coming out on the other side of the mattress. The elemental was a coiling mass above him. One of its heads jammed itself under the bed, but the other drew back, hissing, clearly about to strike. Call held up Miri, just as there was a soft explosion around the door. The elemental whipped toward it, its mouth opening in hideous surprise. Darkness was eating away at the edges of the door, but not just darkness.
Chaos!
Call felt the pull under his ribcage and realized what was happening. Aaron was using his chaos power, drawing on Call as a counterweight. Call held still as the door began to crumble in on itself. It vanished, sucked away into the void. Aaron exploded into the room, wild-eyed.
"Makar!"
he yelled, his own hand still raised in summoning, black light burning around it.
"You idiot! Use your magic!"
The elemental was whipping back and forth, clearly confused by Aaron's sudden appearance. Call scrambled to his feet and reached out toward chaos. He felt the wild, roiling emptiness of the void open. Darkness spilled into the bedroom. The air elemental gave a puffing screech and sailed toward the opening to the common room. It slashed Aaron's shoulder as it went past, gliding toward Tamara's room. She opened the door just as it lunged for her throat. Tamara dropped, rolling beneath it with more agility than Call would have in 1,000 years. Havoc bounded toward her, snapping at the creature. The elemental pivoted in the air, horrible legs quivering, horrible jaws opening wide enough to swallow any of them whole. Aaron added his power to Call's. The chaos grew, tendrils of oily nothing snaking into the room. From the opening in the void, something emerged, smoke-colored, and wearing the rough shape of a monstrously sleek cat with countless eyes. A chaos elemental, springing into the room. Call made a sound in his throat. Opening chaos was one thing, summoning a chaos elemental was another. The air elemental spun around, sensing a new threat. It made a deep sound in its throat. Then it rushed at the Chaos Elemental at the same moment the Chaos Elemental went for it. They met in the air. The Chaos Elemental bit at the Air Elemental's underside as the Chaos Elemental coiled around and around it, squeezing. The door to their rooms opened, and Master Rufus hurtled in, followed by Master Milagros.
"Call!"
Rufus started to shout. Then he caught sight of the elementals coiling together in the air. For a moment, he looked almost fascinated.
Then he swept his hand into the air and blew. His breath became a shockwave that swept over the elementals. The whole room shook. Kaul fell to the floor as the air elemental shuddered and came apart into eddies that spiraled like miniature dust storms. The chaos elemental splashed against the wall like spilled ink. It did not reform.
"Wow," Aaron said.
Kaul's heart thudded dully. He pushed himself to his feet. Tamara, in a pair of blue pajamas, now torn at the knee, crossed the room to him, putting her hand on his arm. He had to forcibly stop himself from leaning against her the way he suddenly wanted to. He looked down at his chest, at his torn shirt, and the blood still welling there. The injuries weren't deep, but they stung like bee stings. Aaron was petting Havoc's head, staring meditatively at the spot where the chaos elemental had been.
"We heard all the shouting," Master Milagros said. "We didn't think. How badly are you hurt?"
"I'm okay," Kaul said. Master Rufus sighed, clearly rattled. They all were, but it was unnerving to see Master Rufus anything but perfectly composed. Kaul felt stupid. Master Rufus had told them not to investigate, but they'd done it anyway. And then Jasper had come up with a totally ridiculous plan. How had none of them realized that by making it clear where Kaul was going to be, it also made it clear that he wasn't going to be in his room? Anyone wanting to break in knew exactly when to do it.
"Apprentices, let's all sit down," Master Rufus said. "You can tell me what happened, and then we can decide what to do next."
Master Milagros moved toward the hall door.
"I am going to make sure no one else gets in or out of here," she said. "Absolutely no one."
She sounded kind of paranoid. It was very reassuring to Kaul. He was feeling kind of paranoid, too. He went to the couch with Tamara and Aaron. As soon as they sat down, Havoc jumped up on Kaul's lap and started to lick his face. Tamara took point on explaining how they were all in the library, studying with Jasper, and then had come back to their rooms. She didn't mention Kaul's stunt in the refectory or their plan, for which he was grateful. He was feeling dumb and freaked out enough already. Kaul explained how the thing had been in his room and how the door had been locked with a spell. When he started talking about it, he could feel his hands begin to shake and jammed them between his knees to hide the trembling from Master Rufus and his friends. After hearing about the locking spell, Master Rufus went over to inspect what was left of the door. Since Aaron had pretty much disappeared the whole thing, there wasn't a lot to see. After a few minutes, Master Rufus sighed.
"We're going to have to bring a team of mages in here. And in case something else has been tampered with, we're going to move the three of you to another room. Permanently. I know it's late, but I am going to need you to take whatever you had on you and bring only that. We will give you the rest of your things as soon as they are confirmed as safe."
"Do we really need to do that?" Tamara asked.